Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we've got almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about objectives, outputs, and outcomes with Marketing Operations Manager at Virgin Media O2, Helen Braun, with MD of Earnest, Chris Wilson, with the CEO and founder of Adisiant, Ali Richards, with UKI marketer at Kindrel, Sam Bentley, and with Marketing Manager at MBS, Izzy Herrera. Are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in business marketing land. And we've reached O. O stands for objectives, outputs, and outcomes. Five experts will talk on the topic today, starting with Marketing Operations Manager at O2 Telefonica UK, Helen Braun. Helen, welcome to the podcast. And over to you.
Thanks so much, Dave. Thanks for having me. So I thought I'd start with some definitions, because the three O terms, they alliterate very nicely, but that can also make them confusing. So objectives, that sets the direction of what you want to achieve in the future. And I think we all get taught about SMART objectives, you know, make them clear, specific, quantified, so you know when they've been attained. And that actually is easier said than done, because it can take a bit of time to craft meaningful and clear objectives. The outputs are the actual tasks or actions you need to deliver along the way. And they're the activities that you work on day to day, which is why they tend to take up the lion's share of your time and your headspace most often. And then looking at outcomes, well, these are the measurable business results that marketing achieves, or where marketing makes a tangible contribution. And I see outcomes as being locked into results for the overall business. And that gives them a wider perspective than just what marketing is delivering. And they can be hard measures such as business revenue or profitability, and also softer measures such as customer experience. So why are the terms useful? Well, I think setting clear objectives helps with all aspects of planning and running marketing activity. Being super clear on the objectives from the outset helps guide you on your strategy, the actions you need to take, and how much effort and resource you need to invest. And you rarely do anything by yourself in B2B marketing. So having clear objectives helps with collaboration and makes it easier to galvanize support and secure resources. Also, having those objectives nailed helps you decide in advance which metrics matter the most. Then you can make sure you've put tools and processes in place to measure them at a sensible cadence. Looking at outputs, or having a plan for these, gives you the intermediary steps that you need to deliver along the way. And it helps you monitor progress towards your end goal and adjust as you need to. Having a clear view of outputs also helps you prioritize. If an output relates to a key objective, then it will take priority over other actions. Looking at why outcomes are useful, I mean, really all the elements are interlinked and they're all equally important. But it's the third one, outcomes, that tends to be the star of the show. Because delivering or contributing towards business outcomes for your organization rightly gets the spotlight, because it's delivering results. And if marketing is driving the right outcomes, you can continue with it because it's working well. And if the outcomes aren't coming through, you need to adjust or stop, divert resources elsewhere. Being able to show clear business value through outcomes is obviously helpful with securing more resources. And an age-old challenge for B2B marketing is collaborating with sales. So if the marketing team and the sales team are both focused on the same business outcome, such as revenue, that can help with alignment. It also helps to make sure marketing isn't seen as just a support function, because focusing on business outcomes helps counteract that and show the key role that marketing has by demonstrating its relevance and value. So I think it really helps to think of all three together to make sure your marketing plans are aligned with what the business needs to achieve. So for example, your marketing objective might be to grow market share in a defined segment. The outputs to get you there are the changes you need to make, such as updating your product offering and delivering your marcoms plan. And the outcome will be the business results you deliver in terms of revenue, growth, and profitability. But if things are not aligned like that, you could end up with something a colleague told me about called the watermelon effect. And this is where the outputs are all showing as green because they're being delivered, but the outcomes for the organization are actually all at red. So something clearly isn't right. And this is because organizations sometimes put too much focus on the outputs without checking them regularly against the actual outcomes they're delivering. There's a couple of things that can help to prevent this from happening. So if you have meaningful KPIs for your outputs and they're realistic, that will help to prevent the watermelon effect. And secondly, if you can work on effective communication between teams and hold each other accountable, not only for the output, but also for the outcome, that will help to keep everything aligned as well. I thought it might be interesting to pose the question on whether the advent of digital has changed anything with this framework. And in my opinion, the answer is that it hasn't, because planning your objectives, your outputs, and assessing outcomes achieved is a fundamental framework for marketing. It's still as vital as ever, and actually can help you when you're thinking through the maze of digital technologies and options and the metrics that are available. Because that's the big upside of digital. There's a lot of metrics, but it's also the downside too. Really, all those metrics, it can be confusing, time consuming to analyze the data, and it can even distract you from the measurements that matter. It can be so important to determine which metrics are indicators that you're going in the right direction, such as web traffic or leads generated, and which metrics are really helping you pin down the business outcome achieved. So I'd like to share four top tips that I think can help with using this approach to plan and run B2B marketing. Tip one, it's really helpful if you plan your objectives, outputs, and outcomes in advance and get them written down so everything is clear. This can be quite simple to do, and it doesn't even need to be shared unless that's helpful. A quick one-pager on OneNote, a short slide pack, or even a playbook for a campaign can all do the trick. Tip two, particularly with metrics, and this is said from the heart as an ops person, it's vital to plan them upfront and make sure everything is set up to gather the data you need and have it there at the right intervals. Tip three, B2B marketing tends to be very busy with plenty of outputs and tasks to occupy us. And that's what we spend most of our days doing. But if you can block out small chunks of time at regular intervals to assess progress against objectives and outcomes, this will give you a discipline. It will make sure you monitor progress, and it will help you give a clear account of how marketing is doing. My fourth tip is you don't have to own all of the three areas all by yourself. Maybe you have access to an insights and analytics support team or a sales ops team that can help you with measurement and quantifying outcomes. So if you do, just use all of the help you can get. And agencies can also be a brilliant support here. They bring an external perspective. They're really skilled at stepping back and looking at the bigger picture of the business outcomes that need to be delivered. And they really can be your right hand in making sure your marketing really shines. In summary, thinking about objectives, outputs, and outcomes is a huge help with planning and delivery. It's a really useful way of thinking about where you need to focus, and it's a lot more than just a game of semantics. It's a good framework because it's simple to use. It can be applied to any marketing initiative, small or large, tactical or strategic. It helps you keep the right focus and mindset, and it encourages you to review and take action to optimize towards the results you need to achieve.
Helen Bourne, Marketing Operations Manager at O2 Telefonica UK, thank you very much. Our second objectives, outputs and outcomes expert is the Managing Director at Earnest, Chris Wilson. Chris, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. So just a quick tiny bit of context. I run a B2B agency called Earnest. And so today, for the purpose of this quick talk, I kind of have two hats. One is that I actually run our marketing function. I have a marketing budget. It is really small compared to many of our clients, but I have to be really disciplined about setting objectives, outcomes, and outputs. It's essential to any kind of a success that we have within that function. But the other side is that I learn hugely from all of our clients who have exactly the same challenges, just on a bigger scale with more stakeholders and a lot more going on. And so it's really interesting, I think, what I've learned over the many years about this. It's the last bit, just before I get going, is I'm going to make no apologies that I am actually going to reference a fair bit of marketing theory and academic stuff. I'm a classically trained marketeer, I guess you could say, and I make no apologies for that, whilst the tools and technologies and the data that we've got at our hands today has changed everything. Strategy and planning actually really hasn't changed that much. So actually, lots of it is still really relevant. Okay, so let's get going. First point, those three terms, objectives, outcomes, outputs, people use them interchangeably. It's a very bad thing. We need to make sure that we know what we're talking about here. So let's start with objectives. It's absolutely critical. And really, I think in our industry, we just need to do the basics well. And I'm talking about smart objectives, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timed. It's not rocket science. We really, really need to do it, because by doing that, we will get far better results and we will be held accountable, as we already are, but we'll be able to prove that we've had fixed points in our objectives that actually mean something. So I also think we've got the data to do this much better than we ever could before. So I think there's kind of no excuse for getting this right, actually. The one thing I'm going to flag as a challenge is the R in SMART, which is relevant. And I think this is also where we go a bit wrong. I actually think what we need to do as an industry is always be looking at what problem are we trying to solve. Revenue, let's say that. It's a really classic issue. Pretty much all businesses I speak to, including our own, want to grow revenues. It's obvious and makes tons of sense. But that doesn't necessarily mean that marketing's got a singular role in that. The question is, where can marketing help most? Classic example, the answer is often lead gen. That is the usual thing we hear. But guess what? That might not be the answer. That might not be the problem we're trying to solve. What if people haven't heard of the company? Lead gen is going to be a very expensive way to get the name out there and make people comfortable about this organization or the proposition. So it's probably a brand awareness problem, for example. Another one is, if people don't understand what it is you're selling and what you do and what the benefits are, lead gen ain't going to help at all. It's actually a proposition piece. And in marketing, we're great at proposition development. So really, relevance is about what is the problem we're trying to solve, and then let's prioritize that and then do that for the business. Quantifying objectives. Now, this is really hard. So this covers the sort of measurable and specific type of things about it, because I think we've all been faced with the we want more leads, please. And obvious point, more is not a number. So how do we get a number on this? And I actually think, whilst it is actually very hard to get this perfect, we shouldn't aim for perfection. I think we've got five numbers that we in marketing must know, and we must kind of know it by heart. First thing is, well, growth rate of the business. What is it trying to achieve? What percentage growth rate and how much is that in revenue terms? Then let's move down a notch. What is the average sale value? You know, how much is a customer typically worth? And there'll be variances, of course, but let's just get an aggregate number there. What is the rough number from people that turn up to the website that then take some kind of lead form fill, raise a hand, give you their data to contact in whatever way form? What is that metric? Then one step down again, of those forms, how many of them are any good? In other words, how many are sales accepted? How many are conversations that you need to have? And then once you get further down, what is the sales closure rate? From qualified lead to closed business, you know, what is the win rate? Everyone in marketing should know those numbers. Now, there are many more to know and to play with, but those five will get you so far down the road to being really good at objective setting, really quantifiable. Right, quickly, because I need to keep going. Outputs and outcomes. Now, this is a massive hobby horse of mine. It drives me nuts that they are completely different, but people get them confused and the wrong way around. Outputs. Too many marketing teams talk about our outputs and are almost measured by outputs, but outputs don't mean anything. Outcomes do. So actually, what we should be looking at is what are the results we're trying to achieve? And then what outputs can lead to those outcomes. And again, I think they're getting much easier to measure. There are ways of quantifying this in so much better than it ever used to be. But outputs and outcomes, they are separate. Outcomes first, every time, outcomes, and then look at outputs. And I think in marketing, we love new shiny things. We love seeing things. We love spending our time on outputs. And of course, I do. That's the main thing that I do. As being part of a creative agency, but outcomes is where we should be focused. That is the biggest single thing for that. I also think when we come to outcomes, that there is an opportunity in B2B marketing here. And this has been talked about a bit, that the pandemic has kind of, in many industries, sort of put marketing in B2B kind of closer to the heart of the organization, and it's been more visible and it's been more able to show its value. But I think we've got an opportunity to broaden our remit on outcomes. And I don't think outcomes should be just leads or just brand awareness. In fact, I think there's a lot that marketing, which is a strategic function, should be able to grab hold of and put its arms around. Three, I think, are a really big deal. First one is customer sat, NPS. I think marketing's voice of the customer. I think we should champion them in the businesses that we work for. And there should be opportunities to improve that experience that we in marketing, we're really good at this. We really understand that. And so we can add a lot of value and own the customer sat side of things. Second one, and it is deliberately different, is customer advocacy. And the reason, I think, you know, great sat and great NPS lead to advocacy. Don't get me wrong, of course, that's true. But I think it needs to be separated out, because this is about a program that gets you case studies, that gets you testimonials, gets you references. And we all know how hard this is. But I think one of the reasons it's harder than it should be is we kind of leave too much of the role to sales. And they always tell us it's impossible to talk to their wonderful customers. But believe me, get on the phone and you'll get through to them, and they'll usually be pretty happy, actually. There is a barrier that is fictitious. I think marketing should own customer advocacy, and it will become a lot easier to do if we do so. And then the last one, which is probably the most sort of, I guess, controversial, and again, it probably goes back to my classically trained thing, but I think marketing it is a huge growth driver for a business, especially when it looks at how we price products and services. And if we get that right, and we start to have a better price-driven conversation, and we in marketing own that, we change another big P, which is profitability. And I think it's amazing that we do talk about revenue all the time, but never think about profit. Because actually, if you can do some good things around pricing or packaging or bundling or creating revenue recurring bundles, things like that, that can have a direct hit on your EBITDA. So if you're running a 20% EBITDA business, which would be a sort of like a, you know, a good performing services business, for example, that would be something like that. If you add 20% to the EBITDA, it is the same as adding a whole 20% to revenue, but it's a hell of a lot easier, because you're not adding net new customers. You're not spending a ton on marketing budgets. You're not spending a load on advertising or account-based marketing necessarily. That is a huge win for the business if that you, as a strategic function, can affect the profitability of what you sell. And I strongly believe that marketing's role is to absolutely own that conversation. And then my last bit, and hopefully I've just about been under our time period, is that I think that we should shout about this. So not about our outputs, but about our outcomes. And I've been really privileged this last year to work with some amazing CMOs who have completely repositioned marketing within their business. They are very loud and proud about what they've achieved and what their team's achieved. And they are not shy about telling everyone on the board and everyone that will listen and everyone that won't listen what they've achieved. And there's a reason for that, because we are under constant threat of being undercut here. And so we should be really forcing the issue internally and showing people the great stuff we've done. It is time to market the marketing department, I think. And then absolutely last point for me, which is just from an agency perspective, but it's certainly something that I think that clients should hear about, is actually by setting good, clear objectives, you'll get much better value and much more out of your agency for a number of reasons. One, it ensures alignment. You know, there can be no disagreement. If you put really clear objectives, and what they come back with does not align to those objectives, that in is a really clear conversation to have. If it's a bit blurry, it gets a really difficult conversation. I'm sure we've all been in them, and I certainly have myself. If we can be really clear, that should help the agency align what they do, their thinking, their approach, their outputs for you, and therefore the outcomes. And then the last point is that, you know, agencies do get motivated by this stuff. And there is a pride in doing work that's successful. There really is. And of course there is for all B2B marketers, but there is also a selfish gene here. And I always think it's worth knowing what that selfish gene is. Agencies absolutely love winning awards. Now, the only way you win awards these days is to get great results. So if you get clear objectives, then you get really good outcomes. The outcomes are results, and kabang, everyone wins awards. Maybe a silly point to finish with, but they are a great, great way of motivating agencies.
The award-winning Chris Wilson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Our third objectives, outputs and outcomes expert is the CEO and founder of Adisiant, Ali Richards. Ali, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thank you, Dave. Hi. So when you set me this, I kind of had a look at it and thought, well, ultimately, the objective of marketing is sales, of course, and that's kind of blindingly obvious. But how do we then break that down? So one way to break it down is to look at our conversion rate from the top of the funnel to the bottom of the funnel. And in particular, when we considering our performance marketing activities, the bottom of the funnel may well be where we look at the sale, or when we've qualified a lead and we pass it into sales. And that depends on the types of products or services and sales channels that we've got. But to create future demand, we must also consider our above the line activity, or our brand marketing. So those are our kind of two buckets. Now, McKinsey says in a recent report that full funnel marketing is a new must-have for CMOs, but I'm not really sure that that's enough. So let me set the scene as to why I'm not sure about that. First of all, marketing activity is divided into these kind of two buckets or two camps at the moment, either brand marketing or performance marketing. And to use the old phrase, if you're a bit older like me, then it's above the line and below the line. Those are the old terms. Full funnel marketing essentially says the funnel starts with the brand marketing, goes all the way through the sale via performance marketing. And to be effective at full funnel marketing, an organization requires a unified set of KPIs across both those areas and collaboration across the teams in order to activate customers at all points in that funnel. However, the first point to note is that not all companies are doing both these types of marketing, and many, in particular in the last year, have either none or have ditched and cancelled their brand marketing. And that's because brand marketing has a measurement problem. We can't prove that it makes a difference the same way we can with our performance marketing, where we can attribute that to success. It is much easier for boards to justify cutting the budget to brand marketing, but that's troubling for CMOs. 83% of CEOs look to marketing as a growth engine for the business. Again, that's from McKinsey. So if they're cutting the budgets, but they still want growth, where do you turn? What happens next? But performance marketing, that's also suffering. And it's suffering because returns have recently plateaued or declined. And that's thanks to the inflation of digital media costs and customer saturation in highly targeted ad markets. In addition, widely available automation tools have commoditized the execution of performance marketing. And it makes it very difficult to secure a significant competitive advantage with these tools. And so whilst I agree that you need to market all the way through the funnel, if for no other reason that you get more out of the market than the 3% that are ready to buy right now, doing this doesn't connect the journey for the buyer, and it doesn't necessarily change a whole lot of market what marketers are already doing, other than perhaps getting them to talk to each other across the silos within the marketing department. But if your marketing reflects the stages in a funnel as you've defined them for your process, you cannot hope to meet the needs of your buyer at the end, at the stage in their buying process. And why is this? Well, it's simply put because the funnel steps do not match the buyer's actual journey, meaning you're missing out on vital engagement at moments when you're out of sync with the actual buying needs because you're looking at what the funnel does. Therefore, full funnel marketing must be related to the buying journey and not the sales or marketing processes that you've defined. And you must be able to activate customers at any stage in the funnel. You must also know that they are at that stage and what they need at that stage. And our evidence from auditing multiple companies' content against a buyer journey is that there's almost always a big gap in the middle of the buyer journey. And this gap makes full funnel marketing impossible. To do this, you must have the content that will support every step of the buyer's journey, but also that content has to be connected so the buyer can follow the route to purchase. So brand marketing fits at the early stages of the buyer journey, and it's this stage where we can create an emotional attachment and loyalty by linking the customer to the customer's needs and not our products. And by connecting brand content with a buyer journey map, which is activated by performance content, you can then provide a direct measurement for your brand marketing. Buyer journey mapping can prove that brand loyalty affects the conversion rates and why you need to have the brand marketing budget. If you're considering full funnel marketing or wanting to improve your existing approach, the first step is to undertake a content audit, and that will help you understand if you're supporting your buyer through their full decision-making process or if you're losing them to the competition at a crucial moment. This is then when the shape of your funnel is really important. Now, what do I mean by the shape of a funnel? Your funnel graph is most probably an inverted triangle or a bar chart, and at each level, you determine what qualifies a person to be at that level. Typically, the levels are awareness, interest, nurture, action, marketing qualified lead, sales qualified lead, all those sorts of things. You may well have different names for these, but the point is, it's your decision on whether or not a lead is at that stage, and you might do it on some sort of point system, for example. But for the most part, that's arbitrary. It doesn't represent where the buyer is in their decision making. It's just what you've assumed they would be at. And the first problem with the funnel is that it starts too late. By the time a prospect gets into view for you, they are likely 86% through their decision making, according to Google. So your funnel is only really showing you the very last steps of the buying journey. This is important as it dramatically affects your conversion rate. Part of the problem is that you're only marketing to everyone like they're already at this stage of the journey, per what I said earlier, the 3% that's ready to buy right now in the market. And because of this, any reports you have showing the volume of leads in your funnel is wrong because it doesn't represent the buyer journey and you can only optimize what you can properly measure. So when we've analyzed where leads are in relation to their progress to purchase, as opposed to their progress through a lead funnel, you can see a bar chart that will be pretty thin at the top, shrinks to almost nothing, then gets fatter near the bottom. But then the final step is tiny. This happens because invariably the content and campaigns that are driving customers straight to the bottom of the funnel, and we call that a fat bottom funnel. And obviously it's fat, but then goes really skinny because the conversion rate's so bad from that fatness down to the final result. If there is a nurturing process or a sequence that you might have, it might start a bit earlier in the journey, but it's still not really the buyer journey. And it all often leads to poor conversion rates, or certainly conversion rates are not good as they could be. Another problem with not mapping the buyer journey is you may not even know how bad your conversion rates are. If you're measuring by qualification stages, you're not properly seeing how many leads are being wasted and going nowhere. This is why the shape of the funnel is really important. At a high level, the first steps to understanding the shape of your funnel are to build your buyer journey map, then track how your customers are consuming content against that map. When armed with that information, you can then start to optimize the journey and, of course, start improving your conversion rates through the entire journey. And from that full funnel marketing idea, you can start to see how you can activate customers at different places in the journey and not just be sending them straight to the bottom. You can do this when you can see how each item of content contributes to the journey and the sale. So full marketing attribution to sale is possible when you take a full funnel approach to with buyer journeys mapped. Now, if we look at that more specifically in a B2B context, there is more to consider. So believe it or not, 15 years or so ago, many deals were done on the golf course. I'm sure Dave probably remembers those. And right now, that seems incredible to us that that was something that was commonplace. It wasn't that long ago. Perhaps it wasn't 15 years ago. Maybe it was even less. I bet there are some listeners that would argue that it is much less than 15 years ago. But that just goes to show and highlight how rapidly things are changing. Perhaps the post-pandemic imposed restrictions of the last year has seen the most change, tipping companies that were dragging their heels to finally commit to digital marketing and sales engagement. The switch over to content driving the sale has been slower, probably because we all resist change and therefore some companies haven't caught up with the importance of content in the sales and marketing process. But of course, there've also been an evolution in the business-to-business world where businesses have shifted their mindset from targeting customers to engaging buyers. Customers were people that you sold to. Buyers are people who research to work out whether they want to buy from you. It's no longer about relationships and playing golf. A very different style of sales and marketing is now required. For a start, it is almost all driven by content, and that's why companies really need to pay close attention to their content strategy and making sure that it's fit for purpose. We're also seeing more about buying committees. Gartner have been talking about this quite a lot. And then they've been talking about that in relation to account-based marketing and as a reflection of that change. But in order to audit content for the new role it must play, we must also understand that the buyer journey is for different individuals within these buying committees. Only when you have a buyer journey mapped that all the different individuals can travel along, is it possible to make sure your content is supporting your customers through the buying process. So if you are a marketeer and you're looking for the next edge or what you can do to improve sales and conversion rates, then you need to take a look at buyer journey mapping and understand the gaps that you have in your content and then drive your customers through that journey. This is a question to be able to track it all and do the optimization required around your content and your maps.
So improve your thought leadership, not your golf swing. Ali Richard, CEO and founder of Adisient, thank you very much. Our next objectives, outputs and outcomes expert, Samantha Bentley. Samantha, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks so much. So objectives, outcomes and outputs, the holy trinity of marketing performance. I've had various roles in marketing over the years and every single one of them has asked me to demonstrate value, obviously. But the one I own today actually has performance in the title, and I spend a lot of my time thinking about objectives, outcomes and outputs, what they are, how we measure them, how we communicate them back to the business. when I think marketing performance, I think rather facetiously about a quote that John Wanamaker made. He was a leading American retailer at the start of the last century. He's widely regarded as one of the first marketing pioneers. He founded Wanamaker's, which became one of America's first department stores. If you don't know him or his empire, you'll probably know this quote. 50% of the money I spend on advertising doesn't work. I just don't know which half. The context of that has been lost in time a little. Was he frustrated? Was he boasting? Was he pointing a finger at his marketing director? He certainly wasn't embarrassed to admit he couldn't articulate where his dollars were making an impact. But operating in a category of one at that time and with an estimated personal fortune of $100 million, he might not have cared too much. Few marketers today have such a luxury. Fortunately, a lot has changed in 100 years. Today, we can measure pretty much everything and anything in our marketing toolbox, and we need to. The market is hugely competitive. Our customers are complex, they're demanding, they're flighty, they're online, they're offline. They might not be omnipresent yet, but they're certainly omnichannel. Technology has allowed us to reach and engage and to measure that reach and engagement in a way Mr. Wanamaker can only dream about. Whether it's pay-per-click, unique views, share of voice or dwell times, sentiment analysis, brand health, event engagement, net promoter scores, we have the tools and technology to effectively measure ROI on well over 50% of the money we spend on marketing. So we have a really tight hold on what we can measure, and that's Nirvana, right? That's great. While Wanamaker might say we had it easy, so many tools, so much insight, I think if he took a closer look, he might recognize a similar challenge. We're still searching for what percentage of our marketing works across reports, spreadsheets, analytics, tools. We're still tracking the numbers to try to demonstrate performance and ROI. We just have more campaigns, more channels, more competition. It's faster paced and unpredictable. We use data to try to make sense of it all, to help decision making. We use smart technology to help do that work for us too, identifying patterns, predicting results. And yet, with the volume of information we have to sift through, are we in any better place than John Wanamaker was in the 1920s? Can we clearly articulate what part of our marketing works? I think we can, but we need to balance what we can measure with why we are measuring it. For any commercial organization, the why might be immediately obvious. It's sales, revenue, shareholder value. But while a focus on these may keep us up at night, it doesn't necessarily get us up in the morning. It's certainly not the only reason why I come to work as a marketer. To focus only on the black and white transactional world of number of leads created and one at the end of a sales pipeline will miss the full value of marketing's performance in service of the business. Why do I think that? Because unless you are like Wanamaker and you operate in the category of one, meaningful demand for your products and services means creating a meaningful, engaging, really positive customer experience. Otherwise, your customers will simply go somewhere else. And I'd argue that marketing is the custodian of that experience. It's the part of the organization with a unique view of the customer journey from awareness to advocacy. Our teams are well placed to track all the points of the performance that matter. Crafting a journey that's relevant and engaging is certainly a challenge that motivates me. And I think it's what marketing does best. So, how to do it? I've tried to corral my thoughts into three areas that you might want to think about when setting a balance for measuring marketing performance. Number one, objectives. Take more control and define marketing targets with the business. Often these are dictated to marketing, but it should be a collaborative process. Demand generation and commercial value should absolutely be, and inevitably will be, a foundational objective. But there are stages throughout the customer journey where marketing teams can bring real influence and value. Be specific about what they are and know how you will measure them. Objectives should be clear, they should be long-term, they should be visible to all. They should give your teams a really clear understanding of business direction, because with clarity comes the ability to make decisions, to self-direct, to flex and to iterate their activities and actions based on what they see before them. That's essential in a fast-paced environment. Number two, be open and transparent about the results that you see and do it often. Yes, absolutely bang the drum when you've achieved your targets, but recognize that the path to success may not always be smooth. And it's on the path, the journey, that big lessons are learned. Falling short should be celebrated as an inevitable step on the path to progress. Honest and objective review builds courage and collaboration that provides a platform for better learning. It empowers the team to focus on the here and now, rather than a visionary goal that may, for the moment, seem unobtainable. What did we do today that made the boat go faster? Can we do it tomorrow, but even better? It's a recognition that we haven't got that we haven't got there yet, and it's a commitment to try again tomorrow. Number three, outputs. Do not confuse outputs with outcomes. It's obvious to say, but how many activities you execute is not the same as the value of outcomes you deliver. There is a temptation, especially I think in this post-pandemic environment with its hyper-focus on business and marketing performance, where teams want to increase activity volume in order to try to improve results. I think that's pretty hard to do in today's market conditions. And if it's not hard, it's certainly not effective or sustainable. And it's probably not even necessary. There's lots of psychological studies, papers and books on high performance culture in sport and business and other industries. The findings are very similar, and they allow me to say this with some confidence. One or two activities delivered by a curious, empowered team who understand the business, who are clear on their goals and outcomes, and who are not afraid to fail, will demonstrate higher levels of performance than a team driving many more activities who are measured only on marketing revenue at the end of the quarter. They'll not only perform better, but I'd argue they'd also have more fun. So, objectives, outcomes, outputs, they all imply an end goal. But when it comes to performance, our job as marketing leaders should not be to obsess only about the end goal. It's to obsess about the journey, to be client focused, to match client needs and business objectives. So raise your head above the performance spreadsheet. Stay curious, ask why. Encourage your teams to do the same, and trust that smart, experienced people will find the right path to exceptional performance if they have the right tools, clear goals, and they are empowered to do so.
What a great insight. Sam Bentley, thank you very much. Our final objectives, outputs, and outcomes expert is marketing manager at MBS, Izzy Herrera. Izzy, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, for having me on. So as Dave mentioned, I'm marketing manager at MBS, and we're a tech platform for the construction industry. Our main target market is manufacturers and specifiers, so those people who specify buildings. So yeah, so here to talk about my sort of angle on objective setting and outcomes and outputs. So as I often am working on campaign management, I'd say that I'm quite structured in the approach when it comes to these. So we get set our objective from the business overall, and my manager is very kind of clear on like making sure that our marketing plan, as it should be, is aligning to what the overall business objectives are. So we will take those and we'll work together to identify, you know, what does that then mean for marketing? If this is the business's objective, actually, how can we support that and how can we ensure that that happens? So from the objectives, we can then start making sure that, you know, what are our outcomes from that? What kind of campaign activity or what kind of activity do we need to be executing in order to meet those? And then I guess that is really what drives our outputs. How to, like, some of the kind of things I wanted to cover was, you know, how to balance them against each other and kind of what the benefits are and sometimes what the pitfalls are. I think I, as I mentioned, take quite a structured approach because for me, with my campaigns and working with lots of different people in the team, so if we're very clear on what our objectives are, what our outcome is meant to be, then it really means that with the outputs and how you're like managing sort of the different channels and the different assets that you require, you can kind of give a lot more creativity and a bit more delegation to the rest of the team, because everybody knows ultimately like this is what we're driving for, this is where we're heading. So really that is one of the key benefits for me, especially as, even though, you know, I will come up with the idea of the campaign messaging, I'll come up with the idea of what channels I think we should use. Ultimately, it's a team, sort of like team activity. I don't want to be the only one who's coming up with the ideas for everything, because, you know, it's not as, well, obviously, you know, one person's idea, when it's kind of collaborated with lots of other people, it really develops into something bigger and better. And for me, when you're clear on where you're going, other people can really input on that. Whereas if it's just me who only knows that, you know, this is what we're doing and this is our overall like outcome, then people could kind of suggest things that really aren't very relevant, and then it can kind of like make you a bit like, oh well, I don't really want you to go down that route, or and things like that. Whereas it's like, no, you know, if for example it's a brand awareness campaign, people could be very clear and like, oh well, we could do this and we can maybe be a bit more fun and a bit more broader with our approach, and maybe we should bring in some more thought leadership activity. And I just think you can definitely go a bit more high level, especially like we work in a business where we're talking to two different audiences. If it's a brand awareness campaign that we want to do, it means me and the other marketing manager who looks after the specifier side, I look after the manufacturer side, we can work together on topics that cover both. Whereas if we were looking at more of like a lead gen type campaign, that kind of approach wouldn't really work, because you'd be kind of going too high level, too kind of thought leadership, and it wouldn't really result in people necessarily then becoming a lead. So it's kind of things like that, being really clear on, are you trying to raise brand awareness or are you trying to generate leads? Because that can really dictate your messaging and what you're ultimately trying to do. This sounds a little bit like cheesy, but like working efficiently. If everybody knows, or I know what I'm trying to get to, and you know it's been clear from my manager that this is what we're trying to go, I can, you know, allocate my time a lot better and make sure that we're working efficiently. You know where you're driving to, and you can definitely keep people on track. Also, content is far more on point if you brief someone really well, which if you've got the kind of clear outcomes in your head and you know where you're going, then a brief is a lot stronger. Whereas if you're a bit unsure about, you know, why you're doing this, what you're doing it for, you can kind of get stuff back that isn't potentially kind of on point. And that just means a lot more going back and forth and back and forth and things, which ultimately is a bit of waste of time and money for the business. I think it can be quite difficult sometimes to balance all of these things, like the objectives versus actually the outcome, and then, you know, from that, what you're actually going to deliver. I think ultimately you want everything to align, but sometimes like the outputs, it's quite a different, you know, when you take, you know, you're setting objectives and you're setting your outcomes, they're very like kind of a step back approach, and you can really kind of think holistically. But as soon as you start going into that delivery mode, which is what your, you know, your day to day, sometimes you can get quite stuck in delivery mode. And I think it's often at that point where you need to really take the time to just take a step back and then just check, actually, are these channels the right channels? You know, have these assets that we've created, are they really actually going to deliver what we're trying to do? I think that's something that's definitely easier said than done, because I think once you've done the plan and you're like, go, 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 and everybody in the team is all like, right, cracking on with stuff. But I do think to ensure that you've got a good balance, it is then just having that like break and just being like, right, is this still okay? If we're raising brand awareness, this campaign's ultimately meant to deliver that, is it doing that? And it's even going down to the point of like your target audience, being really clear on that. Some of our target audience are really aware of who we are and what we do. So the approach that we have with them should be quite different with those people who know not really much about us, or they know about us but don't understand how we can help. So I think to keep the balance, it is checking back in and looking back at what you're kind of set out to do. I guess this kind of links in with sometimes what the pitfalls can be if you don't sort of set these targets and set out like correctly. I think you can end up going down a bit of a tangent and you don't really start delivering what you wanted. I mean, sometimes this can be that you actually deliver something really successful in a completely different like area. But, you know, does that actually align to what you intended to do? If it doesn't, then yeah, it kind of means that something kind of went wrong there. If you have done all the planning at the beginning and you have checked in with the business that this is the right thing, and from a marketing perspective, this is the right thing, it's kind of then taking a step back to see where the tangent started. Sometimes the tangents can be because of, as I mentioned, going back to that brief. If you want to deliver a multi-channel campaign, which is often what I'm trying to deliver, depending on sort of the size and budgets of the campaign, it can sometimes be going back to looking at that briefing. Did you make sure that everybody, like the key stakeholders, were on board? Did they know the content fully, or like the brief fully, so that they've produced content that aligns to that? So I do think that can be, yeah, a bit of a pitfall. And really one of the reasons why setting out stuff in the beginning is a real benefit, because if you haven't got any kind of direction, it really can just go in loads of different tangents and ultimately not really end up where you or the business point to be. So that's sort of, yeah, going back to probably wasting time and money and being a bit of a risk there. Getting started, I guess, when I think sometimes in businesses you can get very like set on, like you get an idea and you just want to get on with it. And I think a lot of marketing departments can kind of be at risk for that, as they're seen as like very output driven in the business, and it's there to see like what you deliver and what you're delivering. And so there is that pressure. I've certainly felt it in lots of different businesses, the pressure there to keep delivering and keep pushing something out. But to get started, you really do need to take a step back. And if you've got an idea of a campaign, it's investing that time at the beginning on the direction to make sure that you've, like I mentioned, the things that you could end up going down a tangent and then you don't deliver. So it's sort of like spelling that out for some people. Depends, you can have, sometimes it can be really supportive environment where they understand the planning stage. Sometimes it might be something that a business isn't necessarily used to doing, but it really is something that I think is a really valuable step, because there's just so many positives to it. So for that, I think it's looking at your campaign and starting to think of what are your key campaign outputs, like outcomes for it. So it's vital. I think, you know, sometimes I think people can shy away from doing these tasks because it can sound a bit daunting and you're like, whoa, I've never done this campaign before. If this is a new thing to the business, I don't know how many leads this is going to generate. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that specific. It can, you know, sometimes we're, you know, lucky and we've got data that you can pull on, or you've got experience of running several similar campaigns, or there's knowledge in the business that actually, yeah, from this market size, we think about 5% are going to respond to this campaign, and from that 2% are then going to turn into like marketing qualified leads. And you can, you know, can really break that down. But sometimes there'll be things where you can't do that. And I don't think that's always necessarily required, and it shouldn't put people off trying to do it, because it's actually just making sure that your direction is set and you know where you're going. I feel like I keep saying that, but it really is important, because it really then makes sure that every activity you're doing is going towards brand awareness, or it's going towards driving leads. And also that can help push your assets in the right direction as well. So a campaign I'm working on at the moment, for example, we kind of feel like maybe the target audience isn't educated enough in what we do. So going in for a really hard sell on that, like that kind of target market, really isn't right. So we're looking at assets, you know, where can we like benefit from people listening to us for a bit longer, taking a bit more time, because we need to educate these people and then give them a bit of a soft sell into the benefits and encourage them further down the funnel, as opposed to a really short, snappy approach. So that's kind of pushed us in the direction of a webinar where you've got the time to educate people and include those benefits. So I think all of those things, that's where you start, is really starting to pull things together, identify your target market, identify your objectives, and then that can really push what it is that your outcome will be, and help drive your outputs as well.
Izzy Herrera, thank you very much. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Helen Braum, Chris Wilson, Ali Richards, Sam Bentley, and Izzy Herrera. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye, Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.